This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we start today's politics roundtable with some departures from the Illinois General Assembly. Democratic State Senator Ann Gillespie is leaving her post to take up a new role as a head of the state agency that regulates the insurance industry. Meanwhile, on the Republican side, State Representative Tim Ezinga abruptly resigned from his seat on Monday, and days later, the circumstances behind that remain unclear. Nevertheless, we are trying our best to make sense of it all, and here to help us do just that is Peter Hancock, State House reporter with Capital News Illinois. Peter, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
So just briefly remind us, what does the Department of Insurance do?
Well, it seems to be changing from one year to the next. It's kind of its responsibilities are growing, but essentially it regulates the insurance industry, that which is to say it licenses insurance agents and it authorizes insurance companies to operate in the state of Illinois. Most recently, its duties have been expanded to conduct rate reviews so that when an insurance company, and this has to do with health insurance, in the small group market wants to raise or lower or, you know, enact new premiums, new rates, the insurance department will review that to make sure that it's not excessive and that it's still sufficient to keep the company in good shape. Governor Pritzker wants to expand its role even more in the coming year. He's got a pretty large agenda, which has includes giving it authority for rate review over large group health insurance policies. So it has been kind of an obscure agency up until now, but it is growing in importance.
I was going to say our home insurance went up 40% this last year. I wondered if this is who I could complain to, but maybe not. So you mentioned some of these changes that Governor Pritzker is proposing. That has to go through the General Assembly, though, right? How is that faring?
Right. He has a package of proposals. It is making its way through the House right now. In addition to the rate review that I just explained, he wants to prohibit the use of what are called prior authorization requirements, so that specifically about inpatient mental health care. So when somebody is in a state of crisis and they want to check into a mental health facility, they would no longer have to get prior approval from their health insurance company in order to get coverage. He also wants to ban something called step therapy in prescription drug coverage, that's sometimes referred to as fail first therapy, where insurance company will say, well, I know your doctor wants you to take this very expensive drug, but we're going to make you try this alternative cheaper drug first, and you have to prove to us that this is ineffective before we'll put you on the more expensive drug. It becomes problematic, especially when people change coverage, when you go from Medicaid to a private health insurance company, or, you know, if you're on the exchange market and, you know, 1 year you change coverage plans from 1 year to the next. It's the kind of thing that consumers have complained about for a long time. And so the governor wants to ban that in Illinois.
So it's Ann Gillespie is taking up this post, director of the insurance department. I guess we should specify it's an acting role pending Senate confirmation. What is her background?
She is an attorney. She is a state senator from, I believe, the northwest suburbs around Chicago. She's been in the General Assembly for a while. An attorney who has done consulting work in the healthcare field before. So she has a background in health insurance and the insurance industry generally, not just health insurance. She also serves on the Senate Insurance Committee, where she seems to have respect from both sides of the aisle as kind of a moderate voice Somebody who's not a flamethrower that's going to go after the insurance companies at all costs, but at the same time, not necessarily an apologist for the insurance industry.
All right, let's shift gears now and talk about Tim Ezinga, who anyone who has spent any time in the Chicago area will be familiar with the Ezinga cement mixing trucks that are all over the place there, especially in the south suburbs. What was his reputation in the House before his resignation?
Well, I'm probably not the best person to ask about that. I thought he was fairly low profile. He has been very active in helping fund other Republican candidates. As you said, his family owns a large cement company. They've been very generous contributors to other Republican causes. It did sort of come out of the blue that he just announced that he was resigning his seat in the middle of a legislative session, just a couple of weeks after primary elections. Nobody really saw this coming. He was running unopposed for his seat. He is also the chairman of the Will County Republican Party, and he is not resigning that. There had been some kind of conflicting messages out there. Maybe some people just assumed he was resigning from both, but no, he's just resigning from the legislature, but keeping his post as the Will County chairman. Some people, I think people have encouraged him to run for governor or some higher office. In the past, of course, we just had a governor's race, but maybe there is. I think maybe we haven't heard the last from him. He
Yeah,
may
no,
be
yeah, there is
showing
certainly
up on
that.
the ballot somewhere else.
There is that speculation. On the one hand, I want to say it's pretty unusual, as you said, for someone at this point in the middle of the session of the General Assembly to resign. On the other hand, we've certainly seen a lot of departures from the General Assembly, especially people, just to be candid about it, in the supermajority party. I don't think people find it that fun to be in the Republican supermajority in a heavily Democratic state. I don't know if that was a
Well, there's
factor here.
that, and there's one other thing. Of course, we haven't heard anything specific, but one other reason why someone might resign abruptly in the middle of a session is if they have been offered another job in another industry or maybe outside the state, a job that might conflict with legislative work. We haven't heard anything to that effect, but sometimes when people do resign abruptly at odd times, it's because they've gotten another job offer.
Yeah, well, I suspect maybe we will hear more about this at some point. And maybe we'll have you back to talk about it then. Peter Hancock with
Okay.
Capital News, Illinois. Thanks for making the time to be with us today. And let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we are going to shift now from Illinois government and politics to Washington, D.C., where Linda Kenyon covers the Congress for Illinois Public Media. She joins us now live to talk through what has been happening there. Linda, welcome back.
Well, I'm happy to be here. Thanks, Brian.
I understand you got to see, this is not politics related, you got to see the eclipse this week as well as I did on Monday.
I did. I traveled to Findlay, Ohio, and with a group of folks who had all kinds of telescopic gear, and we covered the eclipse, and we were able to see right through the clouds with the telescopes, with all of the proper sun shields and filters, and it was a spectacular viewing. And it was it, for many, it is and will be a once in a lifetime experience.
It was my fortunate enough to be my second in a lifetime experience. Those of us in Southern Illinois got to see it twice in the last 7 years, and it was great. So I'm glad you got to share in that as well. Let's start with some news out of the Illinois congressional delegation this week. In particular, U.S. Senator Dick Durbin. He is, of course, senior Illinois U.S. Senator. He's also chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and he and some other Democrats are, I don't know, what would you say, perplexed by the some calls out there for Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor to step down from the court? What is the deal happening.
Yeah, yet. Senator Richard Durbin is the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. So any Supreme Court nominations would have to go through his committee. And so he is very perplexed about this growing chorus of a lot of left-wing activists, commentators, et cetera, who are saying that Sotomayor, who is the oldest of three liberal justices on the court, she is 69, should step down now while the Democrats hold both the White House and the Senate. Basically, they're saying that they don't want a repeat of what was seen when President Obama in 2013, personally, apparently, tried to nudge Justice Ginsburg to retire. And she, by the way, at the time was 80 years old. She had twice had cancer, and she did not step down. Sotomayor has type 1 diabetes, and Senator Dick Durbin says, I don't think there's anything that I know about her medical condition that would disqualify for her from continuing in her role on the U.S. Supreme Court. And he also said, I don't see any reason why she wouldn't remain on the bench. And they don't think there's any question as to the fact that she is up, you know, she is up to the job. But what the Democrats are very concerned about is that the very conservative majority in the Supreme Court, which is now 6-3, could become a 7-2 conservative Supreme Court if, in fact, Sonia Sotomayor does not, step down at some point during a prospective Republican administration in both the executive and the legislative and the judicial branch, you know, that this could be a situation where the Supreme Court would become even more conservative than it is right now.
And it's one of those things where even if we've seen now out of Washington, even if Democrats, there's a Democrat in the presidency, if the Republicans control the Senate, which the political pundits say is certainly a possibility this year based on the electoral map and which seats are up, that, you know, we've seen that Senate Republicans are not necessarily willing to confirm Democratic nominees to the court based
That's
on
right.
a shifting set of standards.
That's right. We saw that when now Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell was the then Senate Majority Leader, and he would not even bring up an Obama nominee who at the time was Merrick Garland, who is now, by the way, the U.S. Attorney General. But he would not, McConnell would not bring up the nomination even for a vote or even for debate, I should say, because he said that it was too late in the campaign cycle, and that the Obama still had a year left, by the way, of his term in the White House. And he said that he wanted to, you know, to nominate somebody. But McConnell said, nope, we're going to let the voters decide a year from now.
So obviously there's a lot of nuances and dynamics at play here. Sotomayor is the first Hispanic woman judge, the first. And so, you know, I can imagine Democrats don't want to be seen sort of elbowing the first Latina off the court. On the other hand, Democrats, some liberal activists anyway, were pretty vocal about wanting Stephen Breyer, a white man, to resign from the court as well, to give Democrats the nominee or the opportunity to replace him. I guess I wonder, have we heard anything from Sotomayor herself on this?
We have not, but I will say that, yes, she has type 1 diabetes, which means she's been dealing with it since she was a child. She's been very vocal about it. She has been someone who has brought the issue of diabetes to the forefront for a lot of fellow Americans who do suffer from diabetes, but there has been no indication that her condition has done anything to harm her ability to serve on the U.S. Supreme Court. And when she was confirmed to the Supreme Court, she did, you know, was very clear about having type 1 diabetes, and there did not seem to be a tossed eyebrow in the confirmation process. So for it to come up now just really does seem to reflect what has happened in the intervening years, where the court has taken a very obvious right shift. And certainly during the Trump administration, when the former president was able to get not one, not two, but three nominees on the Supreme Court, and was credited for overturning Roe versus Wade, which he said he was very proud of, and that was his goal. So if you've seen the changes in the Supreme Court, you know, since the overturning of Roe v. Wade, or since the during and after the Trump administration, you can see why conservatives are very happy to wait until there's a new term, a new president in the White House who may be Donald J. Trump again.
All right, just a couple of minutes left. I do want to talk about another thing that the Biden administration is happy to talk about this week, and that is the president's actions on student debt. He's tried in the past to eliminate hundreds of billions of dollars in student debt. That was had some water poured on it, cold water poured on it. But then last year, he has been chipping away here and there. What is the latest with that?
Well, we've been seeing announcements almost every month about the president trying to forgive certain amounts of student loan debt. And he made another announcement today, another loan forgiveness program worth $7.4 billion that would affect 277,000 student loan borrowers. What's different this time is originally his efforts to eliminate a certain degree of student loan debt came under a pandemic era stimulus plan called the HEROES Act. The Capitol Hill loves to work on word salad. HEROES Act stands for Health and Economic Recovery Omnibus Emergency Solutions Act, which spells HEROES Act. And the Supreme Court struck it down, saying that the administration didn't have the authority to forgive student debt. So now the president has been forgiving student debt through a different process, using a different legal authority, a new plan under the Higher Education Act, which administers the student loan debt relief through, of course, the Department of Education. And that is what's happening now. And most of the student loan debt relief goes to those who have, it's an income-driven repayment plan. Those who are in public service, nurses, firefighters, et cetera, those whose loans have been paid consistently for 10 years. And then after that 10 years, a lot of those loan balances are wiped out. So those are just some of those who qualify for this latest round of debt relief.
Yeah, and I suspect we will hear more about additional efforts in this regard in the weeks and months between now and the election. Linda Kenyon, thank you so much for being with us. Have a good weekend.
Thank you. You too.
More to come here on the 21st show after a short break. We are going to be talking about, for something completely different, goats and yoga. Goats and yoga. This is the 21st show. Stay with us.